Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good morning. Welcome in. It's Football Sunday here on WEEI. We are in our Brighton studios, powered by Verizon. We are Boston Sports Original, and we are brought to you by Cars for Kids. Now would be a great time to clean out your garage and donate that old car to Cars for Kids. See how easy it is. Call today, 1-877-CARS-FOR-KIDS, or online at carsforkids.com. That was the final call of the Patriots' first win of the season, Mike Vrabel's first win as head coach of the team, and their first win, as you just heard, in Miami since 2019. Arcan here, Teddy Johnson's here, Chris Shimes here, Mego's here, and you can be here too at 617-779-7937. We'll have phone lines open all day long and all the usual bells and whistles. Tom E. Curran. We'll have our inactives at 11:30, our top TED list. Mego goes inside the locker room, all that good stuff. But I would like to open quickly, and I'll keep this brief because we got to get to everyone, and just say that while the narrative around that win for the Patriots over the Dolphins has sort of, I think, shifted to the idea that the Dolphins may be an all-time bad team as they just lost again on Thursday, I reject that. And you may be surprised to hear that from me because I'm usually the negative one. But in this case, I don't take it lightly that they went down to Miami and beat that team, that they beat Tua, that they won in that environment, that they won in those weather conditions and all those other things that were such a big problem for them for the last 20-plus years. It's really been a major, major issue when it comes to this Patriots team in any incarnation, Bill Belichick, Mac Jones, Tom Brady, whoever, and it doesn't really matter who's over there on the Dolphins side. And this was a close game. It went back and forth. The Patriots came away with it. It was called by many Drake May's best game. I don't take that lightly either, and I do agree with that. I think that's true too. But yeah, I give the Patriots a ton of credit for hanging in there, winning that game, and the defense holding up at the end with that sack from Milton Williams. What a clincher. I thought it was just an awesome game all around, and I don't want to take that lightly. Certainly not coming into this Pittsburgh game. I think that's a lot of momentum, and the Patriots should be feeling good about themselves here, despite the fact that yes, the Dolphins do actually suck. And that's my opening pick. What do you got there?
I couldn't agree with you more. I will not dismiss that win last week for all the reasons you mentioned, Christian. And you guys, it's just, I mean, it's hard to win down there. And you know, even in Tua had his two top receivers out there playing for him. So what's, you know, I know they're not as good this year, clearly, but it was a one-score game going into the fourth quarter against Buffalo on a short week. And they ended up, you know, losing to Buffalo. So either 0-3, and you can look at their record and be like, okay, this isn't a very good team. No, not necessarily. They're a better team than you think. So the Patriots' win last week is a better one than I think a lot of people are giving it credit to. So I'm curious. There's so many questions I have going into today's game. Do the Patriots continue some of the offensive concepts that they did so well last week that they didn't do in week one? You know, are they going to be under center more like they were last week? Are they going to motion more like they did last week? Are they going to have Shanahan-type concepts, wide zone runs, boots, waggles off of the wide zone runs this week like they did last week? That's some of the things I'm looking for. And then even the defense. The defense didn't blitz nearly as much last week as they did in week one. And for three quarters, it wasn't looking good. And then the fourth quarter, the defense really came to play. So there's a lot of interesting things and storylines I'm looking for in this game. What does the offensive game plan look like? What does the defensive game plan look like? And so to me, the compelling storylines are plentiful in this game today.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a question that last week was Drake May's best game as a professional NFL quarterback.
No
like
doubt.
It is not, I don't even think it's remotely close. And
the numbers weren't eye popping either. It's not like he threw for 500 yards, but it was his best game easily.
It was unbelievably efficient is the word that you
need
to use.
And he didn't get enough possessions to really get, he would have gotten over 300 if he had more opportunities with the ball.
Like, I think the big thing for me is even if Devon Achane's foot was in bounds and they score with a minute and 6 seconds left on the clock, I still had all the confidence in the world Drake May was going to put you in a position to kick a field goal to win that football game. Like, that's the way in which he was playing.
Yeah.
I would have too. I was kind of hoping for it, but at the same time, I'll take the win. I'm not going to complain. After 2 weeks, Drake May, these are a bunch of nerd stats for you, but I'll throw them out because I love to do it. Drake May ranks 7th in the NFL at EPA per play. He ranks 8th in completion percentage, 7th in completion percentage over expectation, 9th in yards, 8th in passer rating. So, like, look, he's playing at a top 10 level right now. By every nerd metric known to man, he is playing like a top 10 quarterback right now. Whether it's sustainable or not, we will see. I'm not going to make any assumptions, but I think he can sustain something like this. This week's play calling was, in fact, much better than week one. He was being moved out of the pocket quite a bit more. They were utilizing his legs. He just looked more comfortable. He looked more fluid. He was making every throw. That throw, I cannot tell you how gratifying it was in many, many ways to watch Drake May.
How many ways, Sean?
Avoid the rush, step up into the pocket, and lay an absolute seed to Ramondre Stevenson down the sidelines for 50 yards. Yep. Like, that was a climax moment for me.
My God.
That was a great throw. I agree with
that.
Listen,
if you're coming back from church right now, we apologize.
Yeah. Like, that was like that was everything. I'm like, this is it. This is the moment Drake May finally starts to show people exactly why I have been so horned up for a year and a half.
You and me, horny for him, man.
Like, the horniest guys on the planet. I'm ready for it. Yep. Like, I'm so ready for this to continue, and it needs to happen against a Steelers defense, by the way, who has given up a league-high 22 plays of 15 yards or more.
Can I say something about that play before we move on?
Please do.
Ramondre Stevenson deserves way more credit than he's
been
getting for that play.
He made the play. That was,
he's like Will Campbell arms going up there and getting that thing, and that he made that play.
His credit, Vrabel told us Monday morning they ran that play in practice for Travion Henderson.
Right.
That play was not run for Ramondre. Ramondre was the hot hand. They called it anyways, and he made a fantastic catch. I take nothing away from him. He was more than 50% of the reason why that play was great. It was more so for me the step up in the pocket to avoid the rush, not take his head away from looking downfield, and then make the throw that was just so great.
I mean, the pressure from the outside on that play, I think he actually got a hand on it.
Yeah.
But he had both hands on the ball.
Yep.
So it was good technique.
Oh, so good.
Good fundamentals. And he was able to just guy off and step up a couple more steps to make the pass. So there was a lot of really good teaching kind of points.
Was
just in that
a climax moment for me.
I may regret asking this, but I have two follow-up questions with
that.
One, do you feel that it's fair to say that was the best quarterback performance in a single game that we've seen from a Patriots quarterback since 2021? And if so, do you actually go further back than that?
Yeah, since Tom Brady. That was as efficient as quarterback play gets for the New England Patriots. 19 of 23. He did not put the ball at risk at any moment in that game. Like, there was no turnover-worthy moments there. It was, in a word, spectacular.
All right.
I got one more follow-up. I didn't know if you had another follow-up. Okay.
Nope, that's it.
It's not surprising that Drake May, you mentioned a couple of the metrics. A lot of the metrics, he's top 10 in a lot of the significant metrics of quarterback play. But you got to also kind of tip your cap to the offensive line, who were top 10 in pressure allowed in that game. So the pass protection was better than it has been in a long time around here. And so not surprising that the quarterback would play a better game because the offensive line was blocking better.
It's interesting you bring that up. Out of the second-year quarterbacks in Drake May's rookie class, so Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, all from the same draft class, Drake May has had the second-best clean pocket percentage out of all of those quarterbacks. I think the offensive line has been better, but look what Drake May can do with a clean offensive, clean pocket.
Give him a good line and see what happens.
The credit to Will Campbell and Jared Wilson. Like, those guys are holding up, and they're getting better week in, week out. Like, week one was pretty good. It wasn't the best, but it was pretty good. Week two, very good. And you hope that that improvement continues.
I think my takeaway from last week is a little different, where I do think obviously the most important thing is that they went down there in a hostile environment and tough conditions and they won. But there's still really bad football on this team. And Mike Vrabel talked about this back in the winter when he took this job, that they were going to take advantage of bad football and be good enough that they were going to be able to take advantage of that on other teams. But the penalties, it's like these aren't just penalties from Will Campbell, who's a rookie and trying to figure it out there, or Jared Wilson. Like, this is Morgan Moses and Hunter Henry, whether you thought that call was ticky-tack or not, Austin Hooper the week before. And then on top of that, the missed tackles from Robert Spillane and Christian Ellis. Like, some of these issues are things that I just wouldn't expect from what we would think is a quote-unquote Mike Vrabel team. I know it's very early in the season, and some of this is you don't get the opportunity to work through it in camp the way that you'd expect. But my takeaway from that was, like, they kind of stole that one in Miami, and good for them coming back down 2015. But at the same time, like, the team doesn't look as good still as I thought it was going to.
They almost lost that game, and if they had lost that game, it would have been a crippling loss.
Oh, would have that would have been, honestly.
Like, I don't want to say the season's over in week two, but we'd be having that conversation.
No doubt.
Like, we absolutely would have. If he stayed in bounds, if Achan stayed in bounds and scored, and they didn't come back, I know in your fantasy shame that they do. but if they hadn't, then that would have been, that would have been devastating.
What are the numbers on teams that start 0-2? I think it's like 10% make a playoffs.
11%. Yeah.
11%. So you just there's some about 0-2 versus 1-1 that makes a huge difference from a psychological standpoint.
Well, even that too, like on top of it, is just, you know, Miami's not a great team. And so knowing that you can't beat a great team or a bad team specifically because you're playing bad football would be devastating. It's like, okay, yep, we're still at the bottom of the league. But instead, they were able to figure it out and pull it out. And in large part, too, thanks to the phrasing, sorry.
This is what is with you this morning.
I don't know. I just,
fired
it's in
up.
My
Arnie,
head now.
Arnie, just, Arnie guy.
Yeah. And, I mean, the pressure's getting after it, which is great. You're leading the league in sacks, which is awesome. Milton Williams is a guy you paid in the offseason. He showed up. He looks great. So I think that was a huge bonus as well.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, with that being said, Mego, I know you have a take for this upcoming game here and an issue with the team's best player who has once again been ruled out.
Well, I wouldn't say an issue with. I just am more surprised than I think a lot of people I'm seeing their reactions. Quite surprised that Christian Gonzalez isn't playing today. I thought that he would at least be kind of limited, but he'd be out there.
Because they
rolled him out there on Wednesday to start the week. He was limited in practice every day, but he practiced every day, and he was questionable up until yesterday afternoon. At this point, it's going to be like almost 2 months that he's been out with this hamstring, and I hope that it's just extra precautionary, like that they are just being so careful with him. But at this point, it's kind of strange to me. And I know these soft tissue injuries and these hamstring injuries can be really finicky, and he's like a high-end sports car and you have to be careful with him. But at the same time, I'm like, he's still on his first contract. And if we're getting it to the point now where you're going into week four and he's questionable and you don't know what's going on, like, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it, but I'm disappointed and I'm quite surprised, because up until yesterday afternoon, I thought he's going to be out there on Sunday.
So, Ted, question for you, because I've heard from some people that, like, a lot of NFL coaches look down on soft tissue injuries sometimes just because they're like, hey, you need to be tougher and play through it. When in reality, like, stuff like this, as Mego pointed out, is finicky and you have to kind of be careful. Like, where do NFL coaches really do look down upon that? Because it feels like Vrabel at times has been frustrated with this injury situation.
They do get frustrated by it, but not for the reason that you mentioned. It's because they feel that it could have been prevented. It's not how they handle it after. It's the fact that it happened at all. Mm-hmm. And they look at those tears as something that you were neglecting, stretching, being in good shape. Your conditioning isn't where it needs to be. And that's the reason why you got the injury. So it's the fact that he even got it is what frustrates him probably more than anything else. But if he had a setback, that will frustrate him, because then you're not being responsible with the rehab of the injury that you shouldn't have gotten in the first place.
You think that's where the setback comes from? Like in your just in your experience.
In my experience is you pushed it too hard. And what you're trying to do is when you're coming back from it, you're trying to push it right up to that point where it doesn't pull again. And then you back down and then you pull, you know, you go right up to that point again and then you come back down. So you got to find that point where if you go a little bit harder, it'll tear. But you want to get as close to that line as you can to get back faster. And a lot of guys don't know what that line is if they've never had a hamstring before. So they don't realize that and they go too far. Boom, tear it again, set back again. But the real serious hamstring pulls. Guys, it can last 2 months. It's not.
That's where we're looking at, though. Yeah. Like we're coming up on what we say is kind of worst case scenario for these hamstring pulls.
Yeah. So and I will say this about him not playing today. I have a different view on it. Some people say, you know, even if you put him out there for 10 to 15 plays, all it takes is one play. Like say he's got DK Metcalf man to man, and DK all of a sudden is running away from him, and then he goes, oh, I got to carry up again. It can be one play that he can tear it. So it's not about that. I just think if you're going to put him out there for 10 plays, don't put him out there at all. That's my opinion.
Well, also, you're not a team that has massive Super Bowl expectations. This is not a situation in which you need to rush, as Arkan aptly pointed out, your best player back from injury. And kind of, I've said all along, just wait till the Buffalo game. Bring him back. Maybe now he's a little ahead of schedule. You bring him back. Yep. Play 50,
ahead of schedule.
Play him a little 50% or so against the Carolina Panthers. He gets a couple reps against Tet McMillan, so he gets actual competition instead of in practice. And then he's full go against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday Night Football.
He's ahead of schedule for a torn ACL, maybe.
Yeah, what are we talking about?
It's 2 months. It's not like it's been a year.
He hasn't played since July 28th. Okay. And the other thing is that was the first day of being in pads in practice.
Yeah, but if you have a setback, things like that happen. It's not, I understand that everybody is very concerned and wants the best player on the team to be out there. But at the same time, again, these are soft tissue injuries. You have to be really careful of the way in which you handle these. So and for a team, again, that doesn't have Super Bowl aspirations, don't push him. You want him to be fully healthy and 100% for next season.
You're such a mama bear today. Oh, my God.
They don't have Super Bowl aspirations, but I think they see just making the playoffs as a Super Bowl.
Sure.
And I think they're trying to – that is their – bottom line, trying to, number one goal, in my opinion, to kind of just keep people satisfied going into the offseason. A couple other things to note on this is that Gonzalez is the best player on the team, is he not?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
100%. So it's your best player isn't there to start this season. If he would have gotten this injury, say, week six, it almost would have been more, I think, palatable to people, but it was the beginning of the season. So
it was the first day of batted practice.
And don't forget, what is this team's worst category? Offense, defense, special teams. Where do they rank dead last?
Points after touchdown?
Passing yards allowed. And passing yards allowed.
Back-to-back 300-yard passes.
And Christian Gonzalez obviously would have a huge impact on that. So that's another thing to factor in.
But even knowing that, though, you've weathered the storm. You're 1-1. Come away with a win in that. And so, I think ultimately you just kind of have to, again, continue to weather the storm until he gets back.
I agree. And the saying is, sorry, Christian, real quick, is they say when your hamstring's feeling good, pretty good, really good, give it another week. So that's what they say about him.
Hopefully it's just one more week. He was out there on Wednesday. And Shime, I agree with you. I think people are worried about him not being there, but I think there's also a worry that maybe the best player on the team is a little fragile. I think that's also
part of
the
worry. And I think that's a very fair concern.
All right, we're just getting started here on Football Sunday. WEEI, Chris Shime's going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Aaron Rodgers are in town. We're going to take a look at them and have some other things for you from what was a very, very cool day yesterday at Gillette Stadium. Ted was there for Bill Parcells and Julian Edelman getting inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. We'll have all of that for you right after Shime get you caught up on what's trending right now.
The Christian Arkan Show, weeknights starting at 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Your New England Patriots kickoff at Gillette at 1 o'clock this afternoon to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Inactives will come out around 11:30, but we already know Christian Gonzalez will not play this week. Other injury news around the NFL, Xavier Worthy of the Chiefs is out this week. He's dealing with a shoulder injury. He will be out for the Chiefs against the New York Giants tonight. Amika Egbuka of the Buccaneers and Andrew Thomas of the New York Giants are both expected to play today. 1 o'clock window, we have Packers at Browns, Colts at Titans, Bengals at Vikings, Rams at Eagles, Jets at Buccaneers, Raiders at Commanders, Falcons at Panthers, and the Texans are at the Jacksonville Jaguars. In the 4 o'clock window, the Broncos are at the Chargers, the Saints are at the Seahawks, Cowboys at Bears, and the Cardinals are at Mac Jones and the 49ers. Sunday Night Football tonight, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs take on Russell Wilson and the New York Giants. Kickoff for that one is at 8:20. And in non-football news, the Red Sox beat the Tampa Bay Rays 6-3 yesterday. Kyle Harrison got his first start for the Sox, going six innings, allowing one run on four hits and striking out five. Sox send Connolly early to the mound as they try to get the sweep tonight against the Rays. First pitch 7:35 right here on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's and Star Market, go shopping, get rewarded. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game for you here, and make sure to tune in to the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show at 6:35 with Joe Weil. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Josh McDaniels talking about Drake May, who had that tremendous touchdown pass to Kayshon Booty. Fit that thing right in the space about as small as a window of a thermos there.
Yes,
and and got it there. Beautiful play. Nice touchdown. Great, great game for Drake May. And, of course, since Josh McDaniels and his play calling was the reason he had a bad game in week one, Chris Scheim, that means, of course, that Josh McDaniels is the reason why he played so well. That has to track, right?
It was a much bigger reason why Drake May played well. I think there were a lot of different factors in that game. I think Josh McDaniels incorporating a lot of things that move the pocket and allow Drake May to be athleticism and maximize his athletic ability was a big deal. I thought Drake was extremely accurate. There was no jumpiness in the pocket. There was no kind of insecurity or anxiety to him in his play. And on top of that, he got a clean pocket a lot of the game. So I think there were a lot of factors involved, and Drake May was spectacular.
I'm a little disappointed, Chime. I thought you were going to go with they stopped running the Josh McDaniels offense
and ran the Drake May offense.
Did what he wanted there. If you wanted to really be a hater, that's the way you go for it.
To be fair, I was saying that without actually saying that. Like, that's why
say
I was
it
so
with your
mad.
Chest.
Yeah.
Josh McDaniels still kind of sucks. Like, it's not. I'm not gonna back down from that, because if you saw week one, all he did was drop back straight every time in the second half. This week, however, run game was more balanced. I like to believe Mike Vrabel had a hand in that. I'd like to believe that Vrabel said to him, hey, we need to be better running the football. We need to be more balanced. And that helped Drake. And they also moved the pocket a ton. And Drake was like, hey, I feel comfortable on the move. This is where I feel the best. My game is at its best. And Josh McDaniels, to his credit, took constructive criticism and then helped Drake maybe better in week two.
If I can help make your argument.
Please, Ted. Yeah, please.
Help him.
I think you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
That there was a concerted effort to
save that, Tom,
to change what they were doing from week one. But I think it was the influence of Thomas Brown.
Ooh, interesting.
Passing game coordinator and tight ends coach.
At one time, interim head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Who was also before that, where was he at, do you know?
Carolina.
Well, he was eventually with Sean McVay somewhere.
Oh,
that
tracks.
His offensive philosophy is the McVay-Shanahan philosophy. And so when you see under center bootlegs, wide zone, those are all McVay Shanahan concepts. And that's where he is. Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator, has been educated from that system. And you saw a lot of those concepts in the game plan, which was great.
Ted, that's such an interesting point. Who brought in Thomas Brown to be on the coaching staff, would you say?
I think it was Vrabes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the guy who Vrabel actually brought in was able to help contribute to the offense, and the offense was better. Ted, I think that's an excellent point.
How about that? So they were, what were the,
what
some of the...
What is wrong with you?
What were some...
I'm just crediting Ted for an excellent point.
Shime's like turbo Shime.
Yeah, what's happening to you this morning?
This is a good time.
Drake May has one good game, and you're like,
I haven't even had a half a cup.
I can't tell him anything right now.
Quick, can I highlight some of the differences?
Yes, please. Okay, yeah,
so
please.
In last week's game, some of the differences in last week's game on offense compared to week one were this. A lot more motions. So they went from motioning the least amount in week one of any offense in the NFL to the 17th most motions.
Big Shanahan McVay thing.
Right? They were under center almost 40% more in last week's game than they were in week one game, where I just think being under center, it's a more effective running game as opposed to trying to run out of the shotgun. And also, a big difference was they were 3 yards better on first down. They were 2.3 yards per first down gains in week one versus 5.3 in week two. That is a massive, massive difference. And what is the other one I wanted to say? That's basically it. But so there's a lot of differences that you saw in last week's game plan versus week one. And a lot of the concepts you saw, even though we had Brian Hoyer on this week on the WEI Afternoons, he said, Josh has got boots in his arsenal. But Josh has got all the things that you saw. And I'm like,
he
never uses them.
Well, who is he going to use them with? Tom Brady didn't boot.
That's not his thing, right?
Mac Jones didn't boot. Cam Newton didn't boot. Like, Josh McDaniels has never really had those in his offense.
What is the beauty of a boot? What I love about the boot, it gives the quarterback two options.
And it cuts the field in half.
It cuts the field in half. It's easier to read. It exploits his athleticism. And you know what? There was a time when he booted out and he threw a beautiful touchdown pass to Matt Collins in the back end of the end zone. Gorgeous pass. Perfect play. And then there was a boot that no one was open downfield. So you know what he did?
He
tucked it and ran for 5 yards. And now it's, instead of 2nd and 10, it's 2nd and 5.
Which is much more manageable.
There you go, bud.
And you're hoping you can get it done today against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense that is all banged up. No
so
Derek Harmon, no Alex Highsmith. Joey Porter's out. Deshaun Elliott, safety's out. You're probably going to see some rookies starting today. It's just going to be that kind of game. They do still have some players on that defense. They still have Hayward. They still have Watt. Still have Jalen Ramsey. Darius Slay, I think, is still playing, right? He's still that defense. And they also picked up a couple of ex-Patriots, which we'll talk about
a little bit later on.
They got a whole bunch of them now, including some that they just picked up very recently. But this is a Pittsburgh Steelers defense that gave up 32 points to the Jets and then 31 to Sam Darnold and the Seahawks. And I don't really think that either one of those two quarterbacks has too much on Drake May. So this should be a defense that's vulnerable. They're on the road. And while the Steelers historically have had a very good defense. You know, you always sort of associate them with strong defenses and that 3-4 Dick LeBeau thing was going on for 20 years.
That zone blitz.
Yeah, and now it looks like maybe that's not the case anymore.
Their run defense looks putrid. Absolutely putrid. So I think that you should follow as much as you can from the script last week, minus the linebackers not being able to tackle.
Sure, I don't think
was in the script for what they were looking to do. But I think that you should continue this balance of slightly more run plays than pass plays. I know we're all very excited about Drake May, but it's the best way to support him.
I agree.
And just try to continue that. If it's more of a Travion Henderson / Antonio Gibson day today, fine. But you got to keep that balance in the run game.
And I think having all three of those capable running backs allows you to just constantly run the football because you're just constantly cycling guys out. And if one tends to have the hot hand, you let that guy stay in a little bit longer and he gets more carries, like Ramondre Stevenson last week. And if they're all just kind of balanced, then you just keep rotating them and they all stay fresh and not, they don't get injured, they stay healthy, like everything kind of works out for you. And so I think it's the perfect opportunity here for the offense to have another really successful week, both running and throwing the football.
I would say this, the hard thing about defending a team that has multiple running backs that are effective is they're all different stylistically, like
very
you said.
Much so.
And so once you get used to one running back style, oh, they come in and hit you with a Travion Henderson, who's a completely different style. Oh, then they hit you with Antonio Gibson. I think it's safe to say, I don't want to speak for you guys, I think the running back position, although it's only makes up it's three players, it's the position with the most depth and probably the best
without a question
overall. So to Mago's point, if you can run the football just even somewhat effectively, that's what allows the passing game to really open.
And you can do more of the dorky little stuff that Josh McDaniels likes. So you can send Travion Henderson out on a wheel route and do
that stuff's great.
Stuff, you know, like you don't have to completely abandon the Josh McDaniels system.
No, I don't think it's all terrible. A lot of it's bad, but it's not all awful. I just think you need to maximize, especially in the run game. I think that's where Josh's concepts are really good, is running the football. He's generally always had an effective run game when he's been an offensive coordinator here in New England. I just think a lot of the pass concepts, as Ted pointed out, need to be geared towards more of what that like McVay, Shanahan style offenses do, because it allows Drake May to be a little bit more improvisational, allows him to rely a little bit more on his athleticism.
So just so you people understand, the Sean McVay, Shanahan system that Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator, who's the tight ends coach here for the Patriots, I think has brought and is influencing these game plans, at least last week's, the key to that offense is making the run plays and the pass plays look
identical.
So that's the magic of that, and that's what makes that offense so hard to defend, is that they all kind of look the same. And so for the passing game to work, the running game has to work. So they both help each other out by being effective, because they're both mirroring each other. And I just want to make one other point about the Steelers defense. Just a couple of things that will really kind of hammer home what Christian's talking about, how bad the Steelers' defense is. They rank 21st in third down defense. They rank 23rd in – excuse me, they rank 30th in rushing defense. The Steelers rank 29th in points allowed. You mentioned that. And the Steelers rank 29th in yards allowed. They pretty much are at the bottom of the league. And they're the worst team in sacks.
And they didn't go up against Mahomes and, you know, these great quarterbacks either. They went up against Darnold and Justin Fields.
Who, by the way, Buffalo allowed 27 yards passing to the next week. Like, they have not gone up against some murderer's row of quarterbacks.
And I'm not sure what it is either, because they have their pass rusher. Like, they have a lot of the guys in the defense.
Watt can't get to the quarterback.
Not really this year. He doesn't look healthy. Yeah, he doesn't look like he is.
I think Highsmith is injured too. Like,
TJ's had one sack in the last six games going back to last year.
Yeah, so they're struggling to get pressure. It's putting a lot of strain on those defensive backs, who I don't think are very good. And teams are getting behind these defensive backs. Like I mentioned earlier, 22 plays of 15 yards or more.
I forgot to mention, very good. Great stat. You know who's the second worst team in the NFL against giving up explosive plays is the Patriots. Worst team is the Steelers.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It'll be interesting, because the Steelers can't run the football right now on offense. They're having a lot of difficulties, especially you pointed out earlier, running from shotgun is hard. Rodgers likes to be in shotgun. They're having a hard time doing it. And so it's going to be all on Aaron Rodgers. And honestly, if the Steelers are going to beat the Patriots, it's because Rodgers throws for 300 yards, and you've let up three straight 300-yard passers.
Yeah. Is anyone actually afraid of Aaron Rodgers anymore?
Nope.
A little bit.
I
don't know. He can still
sling
it.
With this secondary,
there was
a
pass. I want to say it was like the fourth play of the game or something for Rodgers last week. He rolls to his right and threw an absolute dart to Freiermuth, and Freiermuth just kind of dropped it in coverage. But
I would say I am less afraid of Aaron Rodgers and more afraid of the Patriots defense. I am afraid of the Patriots defense still trying to figure it out, even though you have all these vets who you brought in free agency. And I wrote about this for Friday, that you have $41 million guaranteed in cash this year, wrapped up in a lot of those free agents. Like Milton Williams, already shown his value 100%. A lot of these other guys still haven't done it for me. And I think that you see the goofy mistakes that they can make, and Aaron Rodgers being able to take advantage of that. All the nonsense that we talk about with the cadence and the substitutions and all of that. Like, even though he doesn't want to get hit and he doesn't want to leave the pocket,
he doesn't want to throw it
exactly.
He can still
pick you apart with his mind that way and screw with you if you're an undisciplined defense. And that's what scares me more than saying, there's Aaron Rodgers on the other side, the quarterback Aaron Rodgers.
Let's just remind people quickly, Christian, what Aaron Rodgers did to the Patriots last year in two games. He had in two
they
games.
They beat him once, right?
In two games versus the Pats last year, Aaron Rodgers completed 75% of his passes.
That's a lot.
He averaged 257 yards per game. He had four touchdowns. He had zero interceptions and a QBR of 115 last year in two games versus the Pats. So that was just last year versus the Pats. So I'm not a believer in him. Gosh, I can't stand the guy.
I'm not a believer in him, but I'm not a total believer in the defense yet
and that's,
either.
That's a fair point.
And he is a total douche, but he's still really smart. He's still one of the great quarterbacks of all time. Like, this is a guy you can't take lightly because at any moment he could do what Russell Wilson did last week
or
against the Cowboys and throw for 450.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And he's also got two good tight ends and two good receivers. I think Calvin Austin's pretty good. So he's got like he's got four targets right there.
And DK
that
Metcalf
he can go to. Yeah.
Ate you alive last year on the Seahawks.
Absolutely.
And that was with Christian Gonzalez, by the way.
So you had the Patriots are playing three guys on this offense for the Steelers that they played last year that were all on different teams. DK Metcalf, Aaron Rodgers, and Jonnu Smith.
Right,
yeah.
And don't forget,
Jonnu Smith revenge game.
What did he do against the Patriots last year? Only 14 catches for 149 yards and a touchdown. So DK killed you last year, Jonnu Smith killed you last year, and Aaron Rodgers killed you last year. They're all in the Steelers now, so that's scary.
I like
before we go to break, yesterday at Gillette in Foxborough, both Bill Parcells and Julian Edelman got inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame. Our own Ted Johnson was there, a keynote speaker, if you will, for this event. Teddy, how was it? I didn't get to I wanted to come down, but I couldn't. How was it?
It was that's the second Hall of Fame introduction ceremony I'd ever been to, and I thought it was magical. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was an amazing day. Partly it's because my favorite coach of all time, Bill Parcells, was being honored, and I had the good honor of the pleasure of being one of the speakers on the panel that got to share some stories and anecdotes about Coach Parcells, which was just amazing. And he's an amazing coach. He only coached me for 2 years, but I have more memories of Bill Parcells than I have of any other coach that coached me. But it's also who came to watch and to celebrate with those guys. My old coach, Al Groh, Dante was there. There's just so many people that are associated with Bill Parcells that were there that was great to see. But it was fun for me, guys. I'm not going to lie. I was very fortunate to be on the first three Super Bowl wins. But I'm not as friendly or have as much familiarity with a lot of the players that were on those three multiple Super Bowl teams in later, 10 years after I retired. So it was fun. I'd never met Danny Amendola. I'd never met Julian Edelman.
You never met Julian Edelman?
I'd never met him.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, I had one idea of Julian Edelman before the ceremony, something totally different after. I love the guy, and I met his dad, Frank, and he's all that in a bag of Cheetos. I just thought I thought his speech was amazing. I didn't think it was just a decent speech. I thought it was a next level speech that Julian Edelman gave from the heart. And what really got me is his speech and his part of his speech about his relationship with Matthew Slater, who was there, of course, in attendance. They're best bros. And just the way he talked about Matthew Slater it got me, man. It was a tremendous day. People spoke from the heart. It was a great kind of mixture of the 90s Patriots with the new age Patriots. The attendance was incredible. The weather was great. I thought everybody was in a great mood, and I thought the Patriots, they got that ceremony down. They know how to do it right. I thought it was a fantastic day, and if you probably want to see, I guess you could go on Patriots.com. The speeches were tremendous. I think it's worth your time. It was a great day.
Yeah, you can check those out on Patriots.com. And if you're on your way to Gillette right now, there is going to be a halftime ceremony for Julian Edelman. They're going to honor him at halftime as well. So you'll be able to check that out. And coming up next, Mego goes inside the locker room. We'll hear from Morgan Moses. We'll talk more about yesterday's events later on in the show, including in They Said It, which is coming up at 11 o'clock. Tom E. at 11:30. We got Wiggy's Keys. We got Degenerate Gambling. We got all sorts of good stuff here on Football Sunday. But coming up next, we go inside the locker room with Mego.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back here. It's Football Sunday. WEEI, Christian Arcan, Ted Johnson, Chris Scheim, and Megan Ottolini, who is about to take us into the locker room with who, Mego?
With one Morgan Moses, of course, your right tackle.
Okay, let's hear it. Here's Morgan Moses.
Just wondering, as you prepare for the Steelers, what are the specific challenges that you're looking at with this defense?
Playing them for a number of years and being in that division, it's one of those lunch pail games, you know, high intensity defense, a lot of good players, a lot of veteran players that's seen a lot of things, and obviously a great head coach over there as well that always has those guys ready to roll. For us, it's just to be able to, leave where we started last week, and obviously, continue working and cleaning up on things. But just being efficient on the offense, especially in first and second down, so it made third downs a lot easier for us. So just, game planning and doing those things and getting ourselves together these next couple of days is going to be very, very important for us.
What difference did you feel from the offense in week two that you really liked as a player out there?
Obviously running the ball, but obviously I think we're just coming together more. I think there's more chemistry that you see that's out there on the field, people getting more comfortable in positions and executing the things that need to be done. And then obviously the biggest part is coming to the sideline when things don't go so great and coming up with a formula and talking it out and getting back on the field and operating and executing. So I think what you see is just, us dialing in into the offensive scheme, doing what we need to do out throughout the weeks to be prepared and, just going out there and playing fast.
What are you seeing from these guys over on the blind side, these rookies? How do you think they're holding up through week two?
They're pretty good. They're doing a fantastic job just taking in the coaching, the details, and just really just communicating with each other. As they get more reps and more games under their belt on that side, they'll get more comfortable, with things and things that they've seen. Obviously coming from training camp to preseason and now to live games, they've gotten to see it all. And so for them, it's just to keep on building and building confidence. And for us older guys, it's just keep on, bringing them along. And I think that's been the most important thing.
How much are you enjoying being kind of the – I don't want to say senior because that makes you sound old and you're younger than me. Well, how's it feel? Do you feel energized by playing with a younger quarterback, some of these young guys on the line?
No, definitely. It's been fun. It's been fun just, obviously learn from some things from them, but obviously, being able to give them little nuggets that I've learned throughout my career. And I think when you can do that in the room, man, everybody's learning, everybody's sharpening their tools and sharpening their, the things they need to do to be successful on game day. And I think we've done a great job of that. And I just look forward to continuing what we're bringing.
Great. Thanks, Morgan.
That was Morgan Moses going inside the locker room there with Megan Ottolini. On the subject of the offensive line, a much, much better game, I think, for them against Miami. You had much cleaner pockets for Drake May, but one thing that was a problem, not just for the offensive line, for the whole team in general, but O-line was certainly guilty of lots of penalties, 12 penalties, 75 yards. I was sort of thinking and hoping, I guess, that a Mike Vrabel team wouldn't have those same kind of issues that you saw at the end with Belichick, certainly last year with Gerard Mayo, and it seems like that is continuing to be a problem here for these Patriots, which, again, didn't cost them the game or anything, but it came awfully close. I mean, that was a game that shouldn't have been as close as it was down the stretch there.
So I want to know, from Ted's perspective, how much of this is refs kind of puffing out their chests to start the season like we see every year, where they call everything that they see, every hand movement that they see? And how much of it is a team that practiced together so little in terms of some of these vets, like Morgan Moses, who were kind of on management plans throughout the summer?
I think it's both. I think it's both, Megan. And I think it's a great point. I kind of forgot that you see a lot more penalties probably to start the season for that reason. They're They'd rather err on the side of calling it than not. And I think you're right. I never liked the fact that Carlton Davis and Steph Diggs and Morgan Moses didn't play hardly at all in training camp and preseason. I don't care. Even if they're older guys, they should have played more. I think both of those things are factors for sure, Megan.
All right, the Patriots taking on the Steelers here. That game will be kicking off at 1 o'clock from Gillette Stadium, but we have lots of things to get to here before we get to that, including They Said It, which is coming up here in just a moment with Chris Schein. We'll go through all the great sound clips of the week, including some from yesterday, which we're also certainly looking forward to. Before we do any of that, though, let's go to the phones. Derek is in Pepperell. Go ahead, Derek.
That was
the best Derek and Pepperell call maybe of all time.
Defining moment for Derek, and he blew it.
I know. If you hear him in the morning show, that was his best call. The best work he's ever done. He kept it short and concise, and he went right to the hold music. I thought that was good. By the way, that hold music slaps.
Was a climax moment for me.
It certainly was there for all of us. All right, this is the Football Sunday here on WEEI. Christian Arcand, Ted Johnson, Chris Scheim, and Megan Ottolini will be right back with They Said It. Scheim will have that for you right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.